Hello and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me as always is Clinton Matos.
Buddy.
And Robin Lee Chetty.
Howdy.
Guys, looking forward to the weekend?
Very much so.
Not really.
What do you mean, Robin? The weekend has to be better than this week.
Yeah, I do the daily COVID reports for us for the site, so I'm not looking forward to the weekend. If the current numbers are anything to go by here.
Yeah.
Another weekend indoors, another one of many.
Right. It's been a busy week. We went into level 4 lockdown on Sunday. We're now all safely locked inside our homes again. But that hasn't stopped the news cycle from marching on. What have you got for us, Robin?
Yeah, so VodaPay. People may have kind of experienced the application thus far. Vodacom launched it in conjunction with MasterCard as a payment platform for merchants, vendors, businesses, corporates, enterprises, all the businessy things. But they are also working on a super app. They're just calling it the super app for now. It's being developed in conjunction with Alipay. You may have, if you've been watching the Euros, you may have seen a lot of Alipay branding around the stadium. So it looks like Vodacom are really leveraging a really large platform as far as getting the super app together. For now, we don't know the precise date the super app is going to launch, but there was a media briefing held earlier this week where we got a little bit more detail as to what Vodacom is working on. So we are expecting the super app to launch potentially at the end of August. Currently, Vodacom is onboarding vendors and merchants, and also looking to developers to kind of see what value they can get out of the super app down the line. And Vodacom actually has quite a few, I guess, heavy hitters already onboarded onto the platform, the likes of Macro, Biddle's Warehouse, Clicks, Edgar's, Gain, Exclusive Books, Booking.com, NetForest, which I think potentially leads into our main topic today. But yeah, like I said, they have quite a few vendors on board already, merchants that are looking to make the most of the platform. And we kind of got a bit more insight as to what Vodacom is planning for this platform down the line. They didn't expressly say outright, but when we asked them about, for example, for the consumption of entertainment rather, with the Spotify, for example, or Netflix, or Showmax, kind of having access to those services via the super app. They said that there's definitely a possibility, but they may be looking towards something like bundling services. So you can get access to, say, an entertainment bundle that includes access to Netflix and Showmax for X amount of months on a specific price point. So it looks like Vodacom is potentially looking to use their super app as a way to kind of keep people within its ecosystem, on its network, and potentially paying money and using data as a result. That said, Vodacom did mention that access to the platform will be zero rated if you are a Vodacom customer. Those obviously that aren't Vodacom customers will have to pay the usual data costs involved with accessing an app like that. So there is a big plan for VodaPay and its super app. It is potentially going to be a platform that is rolled out not only in South Africa but across the rest of Africa and other areas that Vodacom operates in. So come end of August, we could be seeing the launch of a potentially significant application or platform in the country.
I'm curious to know if this is going to spark a debate about net neutrality, because I mean, it was a big conversation of many years ago in the US, and that conversation sort of died out. But I'm curious to know whether the super app is going to inspire that conversation locally. Because, I mean, it's nice to be able to offer your network zero-rated or discounted data for using certain services. But, it becomes a tricky thing to navigate, in my opinion, when not everybody can access it.
I just
hope, true, and I think some people want the cut of the pie, right?
Yeah, everybody does. Clinton, sorry, you wanted to say something?
I just hope they don't start forcing it on everybody, like saying, oh, if you're a Vodacom customer, you now 100% need to pay through Vodacom Pay and you have no other way to pay your account. As a Vodacom customer, that's going to be really irritating and it might push me to move networks. Every time they introduce apps like this, they kind of need to get a return on their investment and they start integrating more of whatever service they're offering into the app. And Robin used the word super app many times because I assume the press release did, and that has me worried that they want to put everything on the app. And you'll want to go into one of the branches to do something and they'll turn you away and say, just do it on the app. That's happened before and I can see it happening again, yeah.
Yeah, will be very interesting to see what happens in August when this app is launched. Clinton, what have you got from us this week?
Something a bit more lighthearted compared to all the doom and gloom we're going to talk about with the lockdown and everything. Yesterday, 1st of July, was Bidoof Day. Now, if that sounds made up, it is because it is made up. So Bidoof, for those who don't know, is a Pokemon that is basically a cartoon beaver. And it is a legacy in the Pokemon community because it came out in the fourth generation. And it was basically used as an HM Pokemon. Basically, you keep it in your party to use certain moves to get around the map, but you don't actually battle with it. You just keep it around as kind of a necessary evil. And then because its stats are so low and it's kind of useless, that also became part of the meme where Bidoof sucks, but it's cute and it's cool. So for some reason, July 1st is also Canada Day. So Canada is usually associated with beavers. This is a beaver. They made it Bidoof's Day. So a few things happened yesterday, but for in the month of July, there's a lot of stuff happening with Pokemon's various arms. So in Pokemon Go, Pokemon Masters EX, and the Pokemon Trading Card Game Online, there's all events going on in those games around Bidoof. Some of them have free stuff just for logging in. Some of them have discounts. It's all different. As always, we have links to all of the stories we discuss, and in my story about Bidoof Day, I have links to those various promotions, but there's also real world things, such as the Pokemon Center overseas. They're selling Bidoof clothing. Not the Pokemon Center, but a company called Mondo is selling a print of Bidoof, which is a limited edition. There's a Bidoof gallery on Giphy of GIFs. There's one more thing. Oh, there's a Bidoof, a special episode of the Pokemon animated show that's streaming for free until today. So check that out. And then also, maybe the best slash worst one, is they made, I don't know what you'd call it, a remix or a redub or an inspired by version of Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley based on Bidoof. It really feels like something made by fans in like 2013 on YouTube, where at the end of it they say, please rate this video 5 stars. The video is, I can't believe how bad slash good it is, because it really goes from so cringeworthy that it becomes hilarious again. So I have a link to all of that. You know, it's just some fun. If you really want to be cynical, it is just a way to sell stuff, obviously. I mean, they are giving things away, but they want people to buy stuff, obviously. If you want to, that's of course that every company is going to do that, but it's just some fun. But they put a lot of effort into this. This isn't just, oh, it's Bidoof Day, here's some pictures of Bidoof. They actually put a lot of work into this and they brought all their partners on board. And I assume they bought the rights to Never Gonna Give You Up for this use. If they didn't, they might get sued. So I assume they did buy the rights to it. I'll put a link to it. I forgot to have you guys listen to it beforehand because it's absolutely hilarious. So yeah, that was Bidoof Day. It's over, but a few parts of it will carry on at least for the next few days. Some of them last a bit further into July, some of them not so much.
Everything is a day, right?
Yeah. I even started my story with that. If you hate people saying, oh, today's pizza slice day and tomorrow's pig leg day and tomorrow's... If you hate all of that, you probably won't like this at all. But I mean, it's just fun. And as someone who has been playing Pokemon for a long time, Bidoof is a big meme. So it's basically a double meme day if you're into that. I know people hate memes too, so...
Right, moving on. We seem to be engaged in a measuring contest between billionaires. Later this month, Jeff Bezos was set to become the first billionaire to go to space aboard a vessel built by his own company. I say was because now Richard Branson is going to beat him to the punch. In a blog post written yesterday, Richard Branson announced that he would be taking a flight to space aboard his Virgin Galactic spacecraft, the VSS Unity. He's being joined by a couple of people, obviously four pilots, and then a chief astronaut instructor, lead operations engineer, vice president of government affairs and research operations. So quite a few people on that flight, but this really just seems like Richard Branson saying, hey, you know what, Jeff Bezos, I can beat you to space. Because what is the value of Richard Branson going to space? Who knows? Press release. Let's burn millions of gallons of fuel for a great-looking press release. Because that's essentially what this comes down to. One thing that is worth mentioning is that Branson did say that when we return, I will announce something very exciting to give more people the chance to become an astronaut. Because space belongs to us all. So watch the space. Sorry?
When, not if. He's very confident in the safety.
When we return, like. Yeah, because that's the other question, right? Is are these old billionaires going to survive the trip to space? I'm sure they will, otherwise they wouldn't let them. Also, you're not really going into deep space. You're literally just going outside of orbit. I don't know what to think of this. It really just seems like we're now in the timeline where billionaires are going to show off how much of their wealth they have. And the rest of us.
Well, I mean, Mark Shuttleworth has both these guys beat, right? And he didn't have to even go into space.
The important differentiation here is that it's to go to space aboard a vessel that a company you own has built. And I don't believe Mark Shuttleworth built his spaceship. Did he?
I don't know. For me, that's bigger brain because he didn't have to spend as much money as these guys had to.
He's the more frugal billionaire. Something weird. You'd think Musk would have done this, seeing as though when you think billionaire with a space company, you usually think of Musk's. So I wonder why he hasn't done it. He's probably less in tune with the safety of his craft, and he still wants to shitpost on Twitter for a few more decades, so he hasn't strapped himself to a rocket yet.
That's all he's planning to be.
I reckon he wants to be the first man on Mars.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is he's saving his first billionaire on Mars.
He's saving himself. He wants to be pure.
So, that's what happened in the news this week. And, of course, the other big piece of news this week was the fact that the Protection of Personal Information Act came into full force. If you don't know what that act is, welcome to 2021. It's nice having you. You have a few decades of news to catch up on. So what is the Protection of Personal Information Act? Well, it's supposed to regulate in harmony with international standards the processing of personal information by public and private bodies in a manner that gives effect to the right to privacy subject to justifiable limitations that are aimed at protecting others' rights and important interests. So essentially what this means is that if you are somebody who processes data, you need to safeguard that data very, very carefully. And if you are found to be negligent or you have improperly secured this data, you could be liable to fines and penalties, all of which we will discuss now in this meat of the podcast. So I think let's start with the most obvious sign that Poppy is in effect, and that is the barrage of emails you may have received in the last week, actually, asking you to either opt in or to do nothing, to remain opt in to a newsletter or some other form of database.
I have a list. I just want to go through quick.
Yeah, let's go through the list of how many
toys. Toys R Us, Eve Tech, Calcaccio, the pizza place. I entered a contest with them, and they must have had my email, and they're like, let's make sure this guy does it. Jaguar, I've never bought a Jaguar at all. They have my email address. Nexus, which used to be Anime Works in the West Rand, where you can buy video games. It's where I play trading cards. Exclusive Books, which someone mentioned earlier. Penguin Publishing, I have no idea why they have my email address. The local online retailer Loot, and then I counted it, I think it was half a dozen PR agencies in South Africa, And Disney Africa, they also had to send out an email. It's kind of hilarious where you put, you know, the big mouse and these billions of dollars, and then they have to send an email saying, you know, we won't give your email address to people who misuse it. So those are just some, those are the eclectic mix. I just had those at the top that I wanted to talk about because that's hilarious. Because a lot of people on Twitter have been, I don't know if complaining is the right word, they're just are kind of enthused by it, saying, hey, I got an email from this florist that I used a decade ago. They had to send this by law just to, you know, safeguard their butts. It's really funny. And a lot of companies are poking fun at it. I don't know. Someone posted in Slack that I think it was Cooler Master. They're saying, anyone getting weird emails or something like
fun
that?
Fun emails.
So, everyone's on top of this. What was the law? I think it was the European
GDPR.
Yeah, when that was instituted a few years ago, this happened too, where everyone and their mother sent out an email saying, we're not going to misuse your details. It feels very much like that, but on a smaller scale because it's South Africa.
Robin, did you get any of these emails?
One or two. a lot from Hippo.
Hippo?
Oh, my yes. God. I want to complain about Hippo.
Multiple different lists. That. So I had to unsubscribe from lists that I didn't even know I was signed up for. So it definitely made me question whether I want to use Hippo for any insurance quotes in the future.
Tell everyone right now to not use Hippo. I gave them my details once. They called me twice a day for more than a week, and I'm still getting calls. I don't know if it's from them. You know, this is just speculation and hearsay, but I've been getting a lot more suspected spam caller true caller alerts after I gave them my details. I would not give Hippo your real details if you want to use them. If they want to send me an email after this and dispute that, I'll show them my call log saying they really misused my email address. So before we even get into that, Robin, did you even read that email? Did it say, we will use your details better? Because that's what they should do.
No, it was just the boilerplate. I think we also be using the same thing of, if you want to continue receiving emails, don't do anything. If you want to not continue to receive emails, please unsubscribe. And then I clicked on that link, and then I saw how many lists I was added on, which was a bit worrying. And I was then unsurprised when I got a call this morning from a company that was working on behalf of Cell C, who I don't have a cell phone contract with, but they're offering me a smartphone contract. So it looks like all those cold calls and people trying to chase up leads, that's not going to change in this, I guess, post-puppy era.
I want to touch on that a little bit quickly, Robin, but we'll actually get to that. I just want to give my side of things quickly. So I received a total of 2 emails yesterday regarding Papier compliance, and both of them were exactly the same. I received one, I think, in my personal email, which is for a service that I'm signed up for, where my my journo profile is posted online, and that was the only, I think that was in total 3 emails that I got asking for my permission to remain on email lists. However, I should say prior to this week and for the last month, I've been trying to sign out of more and more mailing lists, and something that has really helped is Wasper's codes initiative, which they have a tool called the numbering lookup tool, where if you get a spam SMS, you can actually look that number up and you can find out whether it belongs to a Wasper member or whether it's some other random place. And I found this to be an incredibly valuable tool, because if you can find who that belongs to, you can call the person up and say, or the company up and say, please remove me from your marketing lists. And Bob's your uncle. I've stopped receiving spam SMSs from that specific number. However, that having been said, it seems like you playing a game of whack-a-mole where you hit one down and 50 more rise in its place. So, yeah. Not the funnest thing in the face of the planet that we have to do, but at least now we're sort of protected. But yeah, I think that things have gotten off to a rocky start. I do just want to make mention of a few things regarding Poppy now that it is in effect. There is a provision at the moment regarding registration of information officers, chief information officers, and deputy information officers. There was a deadline to have those officials registered with the information regulator by 30th of June. But due to a glitch in the registration portal, that deadline has now fallen away. This doesn't mean that you can't register your information officer. You should still do that. But there is no longer a deadline, and as a result, there is no longer a fine attached to it. And I think that kind of segues into the next thing we wanted to talk about, which was around penalties and fine, or penalties in regards to breaching the Act. Robin, you wanted to take this one, I believe.
Yeah, so I guess this is where things get a little bit murky, because there are different, I guess, tiers of penalties, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so let me go through this very quickly. So there are two sets. So penalties are defined by Section 107 of the POPIA Act. We'll have a link to the POPIA Act for YouTube, or the POPI Act. We'll have a link to the Act for you to leaf through. This Act is a digital version that's created by Michelson Attorneys, but it's something that I've been using a lot over the last year because it allows you to find specific mentions of things within the Act, which is quite convoluted and quite large and lengthy. So Section 107 deals with penalties. So if you are convicted of an offence in terms of this Act, you can face a fine or imprisonment of up to 10 years or a fine or imprisonment of up to 12 months, depending on which section of the Act that you break. So you need to kind of go through each and every single one of these ones, but we're not going to do that now because it's way too laborious. But to give you an idea, it's things like obstruction of the regulator. So obstructing the regulator from doing their job, breaching of confidentiality, obstruction of execution of warrants. There's all these things that would qualify a, not so much a breach, but an offense in terms of this Act. So it really depends. And fines can exceed up to 12 million rand. Which seems a bit low, especially when you consider the General Data Protection Regulations, which stipulate that a fine can be a percentage of a company's annual turnover, which I think would have been a better idea here in South Africa. And before people start 100%. Climbing down my throat saying I support fining and government corruption and all that sort of stuff, I don't. But I do think that it would encourage companies to be a lot more proactive in protecting customer data, because 12 million in the scope of a multi-billion rand company is nothing.
Yeah, but it's also an enormous amount for a small company. So
well, it's up to the maximum is 12 million.
I'm on board with you there, Brendan. It should always be percentages, not a solid fine. Because what's that saying? Fines just make things legal for rich people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that those are like, there need to be ways to adhere to these things. And we'll get to fines and stuff when we get to myths. But I do think that maybe the percentage fine would have been a better way to go through this. But, of course, we didn't write the Act. We could comment on it. But, I mean, comments very rarely or very seldomly make it through into the final version of an Act. So all of this is in effect at the moment. So this means that as a company, you have to start taking protection of your data seriously. And one of the ways that this needs to be addressed is in how we perceive how data is protected. So for instance, right, if I get a piece of malware on my computer and it starts siphoning off data, then I would count that as a breach. But sometimes the information isn't siphoned off. Sometimes there is just an attacker on your network watching things and learning things about your network. And that would still constitute a breach in terms of POPIA. Your data doesn't actually need to leave your premises. It just needs to have been accessed improperly. Does that make sense, guys? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So essentially what you need to ensure is that when you are keeping data, whatever form that takes, you need to ensure that it is protected properly. And you cannot pass this responsibility on to a third party. However, that's kind of tricky because I need to explain this. So if, for instance, we use a Google database, let's just for instance say, right, we use a Google spreadsheet for our email addresses. We don't do that, but let's just say that we do. If that spreadsheet is accessed because there is a breach at Google, that might seem like we are at fault there, right? But what we would need to show as a company is that we took every necessary precaution in order to protect that data. So that would mean showing off things like we made use of a reputable company like Google, which underpins security in this way and this way and this way. We need to show that we are changing passwords often, that only a select group of employees are able to access data. You need to show that you have done everything in your power to protect this information. And I think that's where people kind of get tripped up in this whole Poppy thing. That's the core of it, is that you need to protect the data of your customers. That becomes first and foremost. And I think that that's something that organizations should have been doing from the get-go, but this kind of forces them to do it. And I think that that can only be a good thing. What do you guys think? Do you think that this is a good or bad idea to force companies to protect your data a lot more?
Well,
I'm 100% on board with it.
I'm also on board with it. It's just that, man, my confidence in the government could be a negative number. I don't trust the government to, first of all, enforce this, and I don't trust that the law was written with our best intentions in mind. I honestly think that this was put together as a reaction to what's happening in the EU. And again, it's very early days. I mean, next week they could say there was a big, you know, breach and we've done due diligence and we're going to find this company and people are going to be held accountable. Okay, good. But when is that going to happen? Is it going to be fair? Are we going to get some mom and pop operating a store who did a sign up for a contest and are they being fined? With the South African government, it sounds good on paper. Is it going to be used properly? I'm reckoning no.
Yeah, Robin?
Yeah, I think the litmus test will be that first data breach that happens. Because, I mean, last year we had Absa and Experian. Those were two sizable breaches. And in the case of Experian, at least, they didn't seem to be really to care much about the breach itself. I think having those protections in place is important, but I want to see whether or not the information regulator is actually going to go about this as they've kind of outlined. Because if there is a sizable breach, like whatever Experian or Absa, that affects a lot of people, and we're talking about the finance industry in those kind of aspects. So, again, it might be written down on paper, but whether or not the information regulator is going to really go after these companies remains to be seen. And it's weird to say that I'm waiting for a data breach to happen to kind of test it out, but that's kind of where we are right now. We don't really know how well this will be applied. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing, right, is that we know that data breaches happen often, very often in South Africa, because we get access to research documents and white papers and surveys that are conducted within the industry. And we can see that there's a lot of issues or there's a lot of cybercrime that is happening any hour of the day. And a lot of those breaches happen without us knowing about it. But now if you experience a breach within your organization, you have to inform the information regulator. But as Clinton and yourself have pointed out, at Robin, is that it will take that happening and for the information regulator to make a noise about it and make an example of a company that failed to properly secure their data for this to really hold any sort of water. Because right now it's just an act on paper, right? It's like saying that you're only allowed to travel 120 km on the highway, but everybody travels at 140 anyway because, you know, who's going to stop me? It's a small little law that I'm breaking. And it's the same thing with Poppier, right? If you have a small data breach, you're going to think that it's not that big of a deal. I only have 1,000 customers. But as we've seen, one data breach doesn't really happen in isolation. These things kind of have a tendency to meld together, and cyber criminals create massive profiles of users, and additional data breaches has helped them make that profile a little bit more robust, and then phishing becomes a lot easier and you get duped. So small data breaches turn into large data breaches, and it will be up to the information regulator to ensure that these companies are reporting, which leads to another question from me that I ask myself often is, how is the information regulator going to know if there's a data breach? Because you have to rely on the honesty and goodwill of companies, private organizations, to tell people this. And as we've experienced locally in the last 2 years, and just off the top of my mind, Experian and Liberty have handled their most recent data breaches. They haven't happened this year. It was last year and the year before, if I remember correctly. For Experian was last year, and the year before was Liberty. Both of those data breaches were kind of just glossed over in the end, and we don't know what happened. We don't know who was affected by them. We don't know what sort of data was taken, because when initially these announcements are made, it's, oh, well, you know, user data isn't at risk, and then 3 days later we find out, well, you know, they actually got a database containing everybody's credit cards.
Yeah, they got it all, everybody. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, nothing we can do. And I mean, that's just not right. And I don't know if Poppier is actually going to address this. And it concerns me because it still feels like reporting is on the behalf of the organization. And I mean, if you don't tell anybody about a breach, nobody knows, you know? I mean, sure.
Are you falling in the middle of the woods kind of thing?
Exactly. You can say, oh, but whistleblowers and that sort of stuff. And yeah, and I tell you that people are not going to risk their jobs, especially during a pandemic in South Africa, where we already have an employment problem. If your boss comes to you and says, hey, listen, don't tell anybody about this thing, it's not a big deal, are you going to turn them around and say no? I mean, sure, some people with good integrity will say no, but until you reach that point, you know? So I don't know. I kind of feel like both of you say is that it will come down to having to enforce this act and enforce the different sections and chapters within this act in order to ensure that we are able to operate in a place where we know that companies are using our data correctly. Yeah. Do you guys trust companies to report on breaches? Let's start with you, Robin.
Short answer, no, not at all. Because it's not in the interest, right?
Yeah.
And do they really want the information regulator to stop poking and prodding and looking further into the company? Probably not. So I don't trust companies to do so. And yeah, it's a really unfortunate thing, because invariably, the larger the organization is, the less willing they will be to kind of disclose that kind of information. A small operator like ourselves, for example, I would assume we'd probably be duty bound to kind of disclose that kind of breach if anything like that happened, knock on wood. But yeah, I don't foresee larger enterprises in South Africa really following through on their side of Poppy, at least.
Clinton?
Brendan, the only thing I'll trust a big company to do is to kick a puppy if it ever gets the chance. I don't trust them at all.
Eloquently put, Clinton.
I don't believe that if given the chance not to say anything, they'll say something. They just won't. I think we'll hear a story eventually of a big company having a breach, them trying to suppress it in some form or another, and then getting caught. Now, they'll probably have really good lawyers to defend themselves against paying any fines, but that's besides the point. I'm just saying it's going to happen eventually. They'll try and suppress it, and it'll get out somehow, and hopefully heads will roll, because that's the point of this act, right? It's supposed to be a safeguard for when this stuff happens. Now, could be tomorrow, could be a year from now, could be in a decade, but I think it will happen eventually, and again, it will need to be a litmus test of how much are they really protecting us, and what is this fine going to look like? And I hope we don't have to report, we don't have to rely on whistleblowers, because there will always be a place for them. But I hope a company does come forward eventually and say it. And I think we're going to get into it in these myths, this article you wrote up, Brendan, about what happens when that happens, you know, what happens when it's not negligence that causes a breach. That's your segue, Brendan. Do you want to tell us about some myths about this?
Let's get into it. So I've already touched on one, which is when a data breach is only when data leaves the organization. As I mentioned, that's not true. It's about improper access as well. So if somebody is accessing your data from outside the organization, I mean, they could be taking screenshots, and that's not technically the data leaving your organization. So I think that the writers of this legislation were very smart in clarifying that specific provision, in that it's about access and not just data leaving your organization. I did touch briefly on the issue of compliance. And I do want to mention that there are organizations that are POPIA compliant. If a company is GDPR compliant, that does fall under the gambit of POPIA. So why do I say that? So POPIA has a provision within it that states that as long as a third party is abiding by a law that is similar to POPIA, I'm paraphrasing here heavily, so please don't look for this in the actual act. But essentially what it allows for is that if you are a third party, if you are using a third party and they are outside of the country, as long as they are governed by rules or laws that protect data in a similar way to what POPIA hopes to achieve, you can make use of those services. So off the top of my head, Microsoft, Google, and AWS, the big three, are all compliant in terms of this provision of the Act. So essentially, if you are using their services, you are sort of covered under POPIA. Because what this means is that you can't rely on those services to give you POPIA compliance, right? You still need to make sure that within your organization, you are observing protocols, you are ensuring that data is handled safely and securely. And so while you can use services that are POPIA compliant, and you should use services that are POPIA compliant or that protects user privacy, that doesn't mean that it's a silver bullet. So just be cognizant of that. Try and use reputable sources. If you don't know, give them a call and ask them and say, hey, listen, are you POPIA compliant? Are you compliant with these data protection measures? The next thing I want to touch on is the myth that it's easier to pay a fine than it is to comply. That's just silly, right? If you want to continue paying fines every time you are breached, you're going to run out of runway very, very quickly. Also, if you continually break the fine, you're going to land yourself up in prison. And I would love to see a CEO running a company from prison. That would be really, really interesting to see. So it's important that you keep these provisions in mind. Don't just say, oh, well, I'll pay the fine. Right. So then the final myth is any breach puts my organization at risk of non-compliance. And that is not true. As we've already said, is that it's about prevention. If you can show the information regulator that you have done everything in your power to prevent a data breach or an intrusion or improper access, then that doesn't mean that you're going to get fined. And once again, I want to reiterate this. It is about taking every single precaution you can. And when I say precaution, I mean every security thing, because unfortunately, POPIA, and neither does GDPR, lay out what exactly proper protection is. And I think that that's one of the failings of the bill in my eye, or the act rather, because it's not a bill anymore, it's an act. But in my eye, that's one of the main failures of this act, is it doesn't dictate what those proper measures are. Because I mean, I could say that I've secured my user's passwords with such and such encryption, but if it's an old encryption standard that can be broken within a matter of minutes, that doesn't really help anyone, does it? So it would have been nice to have a bit more clarity on these things, on what it means to actually properly protect
your data. And had a conversation recently with a friend who was asking about this sort of stuff. And I was like, and it dawned on me that this was something that had been overlooked. And I really wish that they had put a bit more thought into that, looking at what sort of standards. But then as well, you can't really write standards into an act because standards change all the time and technology changes all the time. So, I mean, by the time this act was published, we could be on a completely different encryption standard that is way more secure than the one that's in the act.
Do you think that was, I'm not going to say intentionally, do you think that was intentionally, do you think that was unintentionally a good thing for those reasons you just mentioned? Because say if they wrote into the act, you need to use X type of encryption. But what if in a year that encryption is broken and then we have to amend the law? Or what if it just doesn't apply? What if they say you need to use a certain kind of encryption, which is good for databases, but our information is stored in a different kind of database, which makes that one, unusable. Do you think that, I don't think it's a good thing that they were vague, but do you think that there are some unintentional benefits? Not to give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't think it was intentional at all.
So I do think it was somewhat intentional. And the reason I say that is because if you look at legislation in the EU, there have been examples of that happening where a piece of legislation was put into place or an order was granted or put into place, or an order was made rather, and a few years down the line that order becomes irrelevant and then the EU has to scramble to get a new standard in place. I think the most notable version of this is Apple's, or the EU's insistence that Apple must use the same charger type as everyone else. When that was drafted, USB Type-C wasn't a thing, so it was all based around USB, micro USB B, I think it's called, the small little one that was in all BlackBerry chargers.
Yeah, Type B.
Yeah, USB 2.0 Type B. So that became an issue, and obviously that legislation has had to be revisited and all that sort of stuff, but that does show the danger of specifying things within legislation because government moves slower than technology. And that's true all around the world, not just in South Africa. So I think that if it was unintentional, it was it's the luckiest unintentional thing that they've done. But I do think that a lot of past legislation was, or legislation from other parts of the world, was taken into consideration when drafting POPIA all the way back in, I think it was 2009 we first heard about it, or was it 2013 the first draft came out? So, yeah. So it's been, let's say 2013, because that's when the first, like, we got our first good look at the bill. So yeah, it's been a long time coming. So this is a, I really hesitate to laud government and say that they've done a good job, but I really think that POPIA as an act is very well thought out in a lot of ways. As I mentioned, I do wish that they'd been a bit more specific. Like if they had said things like you should use the latest encryption standard for messaging or stuff like that. But once again, we don't know if that's going to be relevant in a year's time, right? Because in a year's time, encrypted messaging could be old hat and we could be using encrypted voice comms or encrypted mind communication. We simply don't know. So I think that what government has done here is the best with what, the best it can do with what little knowledge it has of what's going to happen in the future. I do think that there's a lot of things that need clarity, but yeah, I mean, I think that it's a good piece of legislation because of what it hopes to accomplish. Whether it accomplishes those things will be its ultimate test for it being a good piece of legislation.
Something I also want to add, aside from newsletters, which are legitimate in these companies saying we're updating our policies, something that's not legitimate is a copypasta going around, a kind of fear tactic of people who have WhatsApp groups.
Oh, yeah.
They're receiving these walls of text that say, oh, as an admin of a WhatsApp group, I have to do certain things. No, you're not a company and you're not storing people's data. Unless the government at some point comes out and says, you know, this applies to now WhatsApp and admins therein, don't worry about that. And please don't share that around because it's the exact same of, you know, what are those things that are saying, if you don't send me 10 Rand, you know, your WhatsApp account's going to be deleted. Yeah, don't fall for those and don't waste your time or the time of the people you have on WhatsApp with them.
I mean, kudos to the folks that are sending out those notices. Like, I mean, clearly they're worried about something and they're just trying to cover themselves. But like Clinton says, they're not really going to come for you. If you are a business that has a WhatsApp channel, though, or Telegram channel, definitely send that out because you are a business that is processing data ultimately. So if you are a business, go ahead and do that. But if you're a private person or you're running a neighborhood watch sort of thing, I highly doubt that somebody's going to come to you and say, oh, my data was breached through a WhatsApp group. In that event, yep, they'll probably try and go to WhatsApp before they come to you.
Facebook, not for you.
Yeah, not for you. And also, maybe one day they'll come for you via WhatsApp. But then you can just say, well, you know, I'm a private citizen. I suppose I should be fine. But yeah, it's really not too much. If that changes, though, we will let you know, obviously. But yeah, I think that a lot of the understanding of Popia has been murked in myth and misinformation and obviously fear, because you don't want to have a fine. You don't want your business shut down. I remember the company I used to work at many eons ago, they were already trying to get Popia compliant and they were processing data back in 2013. And we were really concerned about making sure that we were abiding by the act, when the act eventually came into effect, and abiding by the rules that it set out there. And it was something that was complicated at first, but once we understood it and we had spoken to an attorney and we had spoken to an expert, it became a lot easier to implement those protections into our processes. And I think that's perhaps the most important point I want to make here, is that don't try and go this alone. Unless you are an attorney who understands legislation and has a good idea of how courts interpret legislation when it comes to that point, go and ask for help. There are many Poppy experts out there. We did a podcast last year around this time with some experts, and we'd love to get them back to just chat about, now that Poppy is in effect, what this means for your business. So watch that space soon. Watch the space soon. But I think that you need to go and speak to an expert about this, because it's impossible for everybody to understand the nuance of this act. We've given you a basic overview, but at the same time, our basic overview includes go and speak to people about this, and experts, not just Bob, your uncle, who read something from a friend of a friend of a friend, who heard from a mate that apparently works in government. You know, the ubiquitous, oh, I have a friend who works in government, so they know everything.
My dad works for Nintendo.
Yeah, exactly. So make sure that you are informed. It might seem like it's too late now, but I'm going to tell you that it's not. It's never too late to protect your customers' data. And yeah, I think that it's important that you understand how the act applies to your specific business, because once again, every business is different, right? We send newsletters out to our readers, and that's as far as our interaction with data goes. But somebody else could have an entire forum, and they could have an entire intranet where customers can log into. Like, you need to make sure that where your business processes handle data, you are protecting that data. And I think that's the core of what this act is trying to do. I don't want to go... Yeah?
We're not lawyers. Please speak to a lawyer. I mean, we talked about this when they announced that local YouTubers would need to be paying American tax, which I still think is BS. But anyway, please just speak to a lawyer. We're not lawyers. We never claimed to be.
Absolutely. But yeah, I think, does anybody want to add anything else to this conversation before we wrap it up?
I just hope that this is made to actually protect people and not to allow for government sanctioned, I don't know what to call it without getting into territory where I could get a fine, but I hope this isn't just a way to make money off of companies for tiny, nondescript, unimportant events to do with databases. I hope this is made to actually protect people, and I hope that when they do go after people, when they do go after companies with just cause, it's big companies who aren't just trying to make it to the end of the month and keep the lights on and keep food on the table. I hope it's the big companies which are usually at fault when it comes to stuff like this, and not the little guy.
Robin?
Yeah, I think if you are a company that hasn't sorted out their Popia compliance yet, is still time. I think there will be a little bit more leeway given by the information regulator. They're not coming after everyone and right now. Take the steps you need to take. Speak to experts like you've been mentioning and get compliant because, like you said, some companies can handle the 12 million rand fine. Others definitely cannot. So make sure you do the right thing.
Yeah. And that's going to wrap it up from us for this week. We'll have links to the myths we talked about, the link to the Poppier website where you can browse through the act very easily, and links to everything else we spoke about today at the bottom of this post. But from myself, Brendan Lotz, thank you for joining us. Cheerio from Clinton Matos.
Buddy.
And from Robin Lee Chetty.
Yeah, stay safe out there.
We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.